Axel, can you present a patient from your practice where this issue came up?
This issue comes up routinely in my practice in those patients where we have a long progression-free survival. I mean, that's one of the critical issues where I always ponder, should I continue in terms of progression? And it's actually more complicated also by the Optimox-like design that we are using. For instance, you start out with FOLFOX bevacizumab, which most of the American oncologists use. You stop oxaliplatin at a certain time point. You maintain patients on 5-fluorocarbon or capecitabine bevacizumab. And then you see this progressive disease, smoldering progressive disease. Even if you see, let's say, faster progressive disease, what do? You reintroduce oxaliplatin first? Do you switch to FOLFIRI? Do you switch to irinotecan, cetuximab sequentially? These are decisions that we make routinely in our clinical practice. And I have a patient who has been on this maintenance therapy now for, and she still has neurotoxicity from oxaliplatin because we didn't stop oxaliplatin early enough. She's on 5-fluorocarbon bevacizumab now for about a year. And so now she has signs of clearly a clinically relevant progression. So I talked to myself, what would I like to do? And Rich, I would challenge you, would you continue bevacizumab beyond progression? It's always a critical thing. If you had colon cancer, metastatic colon cancer, in a situation where you know it doesn't harm because you don't have cumulative side effects, etc.
I don't feel like I could do for myself what I don't do for my patients, and okay. I don't have data to know.
And Axel, maybe you posed that because you're one of the authors on our poster here tomorrow that asked 150 oncologists, how would you want to be treated if you were in an adjuvant situation, everything from low risk to 15 positive nodes. Any other comments about this?
Yes, I think that Axel's postulate of the kind of patient that he'd continued on is exactly the problem with the BRIGHT registry. What we're maybe seeing here is just a tribute to good medical care by physicians who really... somehow, we don't know how we're picking out the good players, but we know them when we see them. We can't really quantitate it. We can't do a logistic regression analysis, a multivariate analysis. We just know who the good players are, and those may be the people that were selected for the bevacizumab. And that is precisely the reason why we need prospectively randomized and controlled trials instead of just making conclusions from a registry, which, as someone pointed out, is not really a trial.
Yeah. A couple of points to that. The use of trastuzumab beyond lines is based on much less information than what we have here right now. The second point is you cannot explain the results of the propensity of physicians to give bevacizumab or not. So that
you looked at people who are high prescribers. I'm just saying that even amongst that, some that may have to do with their practices.
I agree.
You know, if you're practicing in a city hospital or you're practicing in a white glove practice on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, you may be using more bevacizumab based on just
economic, functional, socioeconomic
status.
This question is so important that I think we need this randomized trial to convince or not convince everyone. I mean, this is something where a clinical trial is so important because you see here among us and in the audience, there's differences in opinion. And the implications, the clinical implications, biologic implications for this disease are tremendous. The implications for oncology are tremendous. So we need this trial.